Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So, stay tuned for tonight's special report on scientific frauds when we come back. Hey, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 40% of what you create and produce. Government gets 60. That's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? And if you think your share isn't enough, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year. And you're going to net about 25%, and the government will net 75%. Now, that means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you'll net $4,000 more dollars, or about 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year. You produce twice as much and you get less than 10% of it. Now, that's guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. That's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only get 25% of it. Now, that's what we teach in our tax and status school, which is now on compact disc for adult home study. Why don't you call today and order our free general law CD package, and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information. It answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we're paying so much and receiving so little in return. So let me show you how to do just that with our tax and status school, which is now available on compact disc for adult home study. Now, to order your free general law CD package, all you have to do is call us and ask for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. And go to the archives page. Scientific frauds. I took a look here at the word scientific. Science. We here in the Western world are enthralled by science. Science is the successor to religion. It has permeated our society. We reject religion, but we have replaced it with science. And science means knowledge. Go look it up. I did. It's in Webster's Dictionary. So the first and primary definition is knowledge. It's something that we know, as opposed to something that we think or feel real good about. And then fraud. Go look that word up. Fraud is a lie. So if you had a scientific lie, scientific fraud, you'd have a knowledgeable deception. Somebody would be deceiving you under the guise of science, and you would believe it because it's knowledge. After all, that's what we want, isn't it? Knowledge. We want more knowledge. And so this is knowledge that is in reality a lie. Now, this lie, this fraud, comes in two forms. We have what we know as an actual fraud, and then there's a constructive fraud. Fraud, that's a legal term, by the way. So you look that up in a legal dictionary. We have two dictionaries. We have a legal dictionary, then we have the standard dictionary. Science is not a legal word, but fraud is. So we look it up here in Bouvier's Law Dictionary. So you have an actual fraud. Now, what that means is that I'm going to lie to you, and I know I'm lying to you, and I have an agenda, and I'm telling you this lie because I want to deceive you. I'm doing it on purpose. I know what I'm doing, and I know how to do it, and I'm doing it to you. That's called an actual fraud. Now, a constructive fraud is where I'm going to lie to you. It's just as bad as the actual lie. In fact, it could be exactly the same lie. But the distinction between an actual and constructive fraud is that a constructive fraud is a lie that the teller actually believes himself. So, if I lied to you and I said, George Washington threw a silver dollar across the Potomac River after he chopped his daddy's cherry tree down with his hatchet, you'd say, well, George Washington did not cut his daddy's cherry tree down with his hatchet, and he did not throw a silver dollar across the Potomac River. You'd say, well, that's a lie. Yeah, but I believe it. See, I believe it. So it isn't a real black lie. It's kind of a little white lie because I'm telling you something that I believe. It's just as false. It didn't happen. It's just as phony. But the distinction is that if you actually believe the lie that you're telling somebody, then it's called a constructive fraud. All right, so now with that in mind, when we go into court and we're talking about perjury, the guy lied, but he believed the lie that he was telling. We discovered that it was false, but it's not perjury because it's a constructive fraud, not an actual fraud. That's how simple that is? All right. Now, scientists don't do that, do they? I mean, you wouldn't find a scientific man wearing a white smock working in his laboratory deliberately deceiving you over, say, global warming or something like that. He wouldn't do that, would he? If a scientist were to lie, it would be because he made an honest, sincere mistake, and he's just sorry as hell, and he won't do that again. And thank you very much for correcting me. That's the way we see scientists. Those are the people that have knowledge. So if you are looking for knowledge, that's science, and if you have the knowledge, well, then you're a scientist. See, I've got this knowledge, and so I'm one of the ists, ISTS. Now, evolution must be true, says the naive one, because natural museums are full of ape men, which are proof that men evolved from lower forms of life. Well, those museum models are reconstructions from very few bones, and ape men have been the hope of evolutionists for more than 160 years now. But they always turn out to be either an ape or a man. Not halfway between. So far, all of the ape men are either men or apes. Not one missing link has ever been found anywhere at any time by anyone for any cause or reason. Well, not yet. We have high hopes, though. And we're out there looking and spending money. This is where your tax dollars go. We're out looking for the missing link. And we're paying a lot of money to find this missing link, and we've been doing this for a long time. We tolerate this because we want to find the missing link. It's a part of our education. It's a part and part of our culture. Now, we haven't found one yet, but by God, we're going to. And if it costs us $50 billion to find him, that's what we're going to pay. And that's what we're going to do. Now, in fact, you could take all of these alleged links that have been found so far and place all of their bones in a single coffin. If ancient ape men roamed the earth, grunting at each other and dragging their women by the hair into dirty caves, then where are all of their remains? Lord Sully Zuckerman, the famous British anthropologist, and some guy that's not a creationist, by the way. Now, this guy's an evolutionist. He said that there are no fossil traces of a transformation from an ape-like creature to man, with a footnote number one here. There are none because it didn't happen, and all the wishing by evolutionists won't make it true either. Now, some evolutionists act as uncomfortable as a dog in hot ashes when we talk about man coming from monkeys or from apes. And some of these evolutionists allege that Darwin did not teach that. Well, when they say Darwin didn't teach that, they're wrong and they're dishonest, because Darwin wrote, quote, the simidae then branched off into two great stems, the Old World and the New World monkeys, and from the latter at a remote period. Man, the wonder and the glory of the universe, proceeded. Well, that should settle whether Darwin taught monkey to man evolution. Now, one of Darwin's most vocal supporters put it even stronger. Dr. G.G. Simpson seemed to be angry when he wrote, quote, "On this subject, by the way, there's been too much pussyfooting. Apologists emphasize that man cannot be a descendant of any living ape, a statement that is obvious to the verge of imbecility. And then they go on to state or imply that man is not really descended from an ape or monkey at all, but from an earlier common ancestor. Since the terms ape and monkey are defined by popular usage, man's ancestors were apes or monkeys, or successively both, and it is, listen to this one, pusillanimous, pusillanimous, can you say pusillanimous, boys and girls, if not dishonest, for an informed investigator to say otherwise," unquote. In case you're wondering about that word, it's spelled P-U-S-I-L-L-A-N-I-M-O-U-S. I've never seen that word before in my life, but boy, that's a good one. I like that one. It's kind of like pussyfooting around. When it comes to protecting, promoting, and praising Darwinism, Simpson seems to be mean as a junkyard dog, and it would be helpful if he had offered some evidence instead of euphemisms or enthusiasm as proof for evolution. Most evolutionists believe that man and apes evolved from a common ancestor, and some say this occurred as long as 20 million years ago, while others say it may have occurred as recently as 5 million years ago. What that means is, we don't know. You know, when you have a variation of 75%, you know, if I was a general contractor and I came out to your house, and I said, well, yeah, I could remodel your kitchen. He says, well, how much is it going to cost you? And I'd say, well, anywhere between $5,000 and $20,000. Would you know how much this is going to cost you to remodel your kitchen, or would you conclude that this contractor does not know how much it's going to cost? Well, I would say that if I came out, looked at your kitchen, and I said to you, the cost of remodeling your kitchen is going to be somewhere between $5,000 and $20,000, I would conclude that I did not know how much it's going to cost. I should tell you, I don't know. So, he can spend his days grunting at others, dragging women by their hair into dirty pads, and generally acting like a brute. He's only acting out according to his nature. Creationists believe that man is a direct creation of a personal God, which occurred just a few thousand years ago. I'm not sure that these creationists know how long ago, 6,000, 60,000, but it's not millions, it's just thousands. We maintain that the few bones found of pre-men were either apes or men, or some other specific creature. There's absolutely no doubt that the sketches and models of ape men are frauds, or, at best, the results of an overactive imagination, or maybe they were smoking funny cigarettes. But how can honest scientists tell us that a particular man was really a forerunner of man without evidence? Well, it's called wishful thinking. Remember that unbelieving scientists must never admit the possibility of God, so when they find a few bones, they give them a Greek name. That makes it much more impressive if we call them by a Greek name. Then they call a news conference and boast about finding further proof of man's evolutionary past. Been doing that now for 160 years or more. They call a news conference and they say, look at these bones, this is further proof of man's evolutionary past. We have not produced one shred of evidence that man has evolved at all. Not a shred. We claim we have. we talk about it a lot. We publish it in our papers and news magazines and so on. But when you actually sit down and say, okay, let's document the specific proofs, the evidence. List it. Write it down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What are they? Well, let's take a look at Java man, Neanderthal man, Piltdown man, Nebraska man, Peking man, and East Africa man. And let's take a look at these. These are all scientific frauds. Over the years, over the past 160 years, and I can remember going to school and hearing about Neanderthal man, Piltdown man. Now, Piltdown man was shown to be a fraud in 1948. Now, I can remember Piltdown man, and I remember that it was shown to be a fraud back when I was a kid. They didn't slow anybody down. They never said, hey, wait a minute. Maybe we ought to be thinking more about the people presenting this evidence. I never saw that happen. They just sweep that under the rug and nobody ever mentions it again. But I wanted to mention it again because, you know, over the years, many people have been deceived. See, they found Piltdown man right around World War I. I forgot exactly the year. We'll take a look at it here in a minute. But about World War I, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle is the guy that did it. Remember the guy that created Sherlock Holmes? Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Well, he was friends with this anthropologist. And so Doyle went out and dummied up a bunch of bones and stuck them in some dirt, see? Then he goes over to this anthropologist and he says, hey, look, I found this bone over here. Let me show you some more of it, see? Takes this guy out and he shows him these bones here in the sand. And the anthropologist gets real excited. And Doyle planted the thought in his mind. He said, maybe this is the missing link. Maybe this is the connection between man and apes. It's called the power of suggestion, and Doyle, now remember, is very knowledgeable in law, very knowledgeable in testimony and evidence. And so the anthropologist starts digging. He digs, and the more he digs, the more he finds, because Doyle keeps going out there and throwing more bones on the ground. See? And he keeps feeding this guy. Pretty soon they've got Piltdown man. See? Well, Doyle never did fess up to it. Doyle always kept a secret. But other anthropologists, you know, when they got to looking at the evidence, you know, as the years went by, they said, hey, wait a minute, old Bob over here has got his head up his hind end, and he's got these bones over here, and he's got Piltdown man, but these bones don't match, and they're all phonied. And so we'll take a look at that story as we progress along, but I thought I'd throw that one out there. That's called Piltdown. Well, Archaeopteryx. Remember that Archaeopteryx? That was the connecting link between dinosaurs and birds. That's also a phony. That's a fraud. Hey, listen, it's not creationists now that are discovering Piltdown man and Archaeopteryx as being frauds. It's the archaeologists themselves. Yeah, it's the guys in the club that discover this. And I've mentioned this before. If you take a look at the cancer cures, of which there's 14 cancer cures, most of the cancer cures were discovered by medical doctors. And yet medical science says there's no cure to cancer and we don't know what to do about it. Well, I've explained that to you in the past. You must wake up and smell the coffee. There's no money in that. The money is in treating cancer, not curing it. Cancer is a $500 billion a year industry. Listen, archaeology is a multi-billion dollar a year industry. And as long as we're looking for the missing link, we've got a meal ticket. As soon as we find the missing link, we're all unemployed. That's what happened with the March of Dimes. As long as we're looking for a cure to polio, we've all got a meal ticket. And the minute we find the polio cure, we're all unemployed. Now, science and scientists, you know, are not dumb people. You don't get to be a scientist by being stupid. And these people all know that their meal tickets are all punched and underwritten by the taxpayers, and it's you and me, the taxpayers over here, that fund all of this scientific research. And as soon as we find the answer to the riddle, then there's no reason to be looking for the answer to the riddle anymore, is there? That's why we've been looking for a cancer cure for 100 years and haven't found it. But boy, we're close. Oh my God, are we close. That keeps us excited. It's like a gambler, you know, sitting there throwing his money away on a crap table. We're awful close. We're awful close. He's down to his last 50 bucks, but we're getting awful close. There's going to be a run here any minute, any second now. Or you're buying a lottery ticket. Boy, that last lottery, boy, I was close. I had 4 numbers out of 6. Boy, was I close. But close on the counts and horseshoes. Always remember that. So, how can honest scientists tell us that a particular man was really a forerunner of man without evidence? It's called wishful thinking. And remember that unbelieving scientists must never admit the possibility of God. So when they find a few bones, they give them a Greek name because it's more impressive. Now, Tim White is an anthropologist at Berkeley, California, and rightly said, quote, "The problem with a lot of anthropologists is that they want so much to find a hominid that any scrap of bone becomes a hominid bone. Hominid, H-O-M-I-N-I-D, bone. Evolutionists, because of their bias, find that they want to find. They go out looking for something and say, well, here's what we want to find. And then when they find it, they say, well, we'll hang a Greek name on it, and here's what we found. In his book, Origins, Richard Leakey exposes the Leakey tradition here. Quote, "You look and look again until you find what you know must be there." Unquote. See, you look and look again until you find what you know must be there. Now, do you call that science? Well, that's what these people call science. A good example of the non-thinking mindset of most evolutionists, not all, but most, is a confession made by Dr. David Pilbeam. I'm going to underline these names. Dr. David Pilbeam. You can't make up names like this. He's of Yale University, one of the top physical anthropologists in America. Dr. Pilbeam wrote, quote, "In the course of rethinking my ideas about human evolution, I have changed somewhat as a scientist. I am aware of the prevalence of implicit assumptions and try harder to dig them out of my own thinking. I'm also aware that there are many assumptions I will get at only later when today's thoughts turn into yesterday's misconceptions. I know that at least in paleoanthropology, data are still so sparse that theory heavily influences interpretations. Theories have, in the past, clearly reflected our current ideologies instead of the actual data." Did you get that? Let me read that to you again. "I know that at least in paleoanthropology, data are still so sparse that theory heavily influences interpretations." So when we find these bones out here, our theories heavily influence what we believe and say. "Theories have in the past clearly reflected our current ideologies instead of the actual data." So what we're telling you people out there with our Greek names that we hang on these bones isn't from actual data, but it's from the interpretation of our theories that we're making these pronouncements. Now that's just real special, isn't it? What a confession. Note this last sentence. "Theories have in the past clearly reflected our current ideologies instead of the actual data." Well, there are many examples of this, in fact. And this is a good place to remind you of Professor Ernst Haeckel, who faked evidence to support his religion of evolution. And you may remember that he admitted that hundreds of the best biologists did the same thing. Well, that's called fraud. Fraud, boys and girls. That's when listen to this again. You may remember that he admitted that hundreds of the best biologists fake evidence. it's like global warming. We have lots of scientists out here that are faking the evidence, which came to light with the revelation of some emails between some of these scientists and Al Gore. You know, Al Gore, the front man here for global warming. Now, if you'll think about global warming for a minute, isn't it true? Is this what they're trying to sell us, global warming? They're telling us we're putting too much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, and therefore, because of this excess carbon dioxide, the Earth is heating up, melting the ice caps, and we're all going to be flooded in Miami and baked in Washington, D.C. Isn't that the story that you heard? Because that's what we're hearing down here in Missouri. All right, now with that story out on the news wires, isn't this the hottest summer on record? Well, it really isn't. 1954 was, but this one's shaping up to be. Not that it is, but it's shaping up to be. I just heard that on Brian Williams last night. Now, the solution to this, so we're told, lies in our Congress. Our Congress is going to solve the problem of global warming, and we call it cap and trade. So what we're going to do is we're going to go out here and we're going to pass some legislation, 2,200 pages of it, and we're going to saddle the electric utility companies that are burning all this coal and making all this carbon dioxide, and we're going to make them pay taxes, which in turn is going to double our utility bills. All right. Now let me ask you, let's think this through for a second. Can you tell me how doubling my utility bill and producing $1 trillion of added federal revenue for the government to spend is going to reduce 1 pound of carbon being put in the air by burning coal? Send me an email, would you, and explain how that's going to reduce carbon in the atmosphere. You see, boys and girls, this cap and trade and this global warming thing doesn't have anything to do with reducing the total amount of carbon dioxide in the air. It has to do with, we're going to penalize all of you utilities out there because you're putting this carbon dioxide into the air, so you got to pay this tax. And then the government's going to take that money on that tax, and what are they going to do with that money to reduce the carbon in the air? See, it would seem like to me the more logical thing to do, if, in fact, carbon dioxide is causing global warming, that you would shut down all of the coal-fired power plants. What you would do is enact an energy bill, and you would say, from this point forward, you cannot build a coal-fired power plant. You have to build a nuclear power plant, or you have to erect a wind generator, or you have to have some other form of green energy, but you cannot build any more coal-fired power plants. And that every power plant that you're going to build from now on has to be carbon-free. I mean, that would be the logical solution, wouldn't it? But that isn't the solution to global warming. It's cap and trade, and let's tax these dirty polluters. Well, okay. Now, with that in mind, I wanted to point out that there's a lot of scientific frauds that go on under the guise of science. Now, global warming is being brought to us under the guise of science. And the reality of it is, it's a scientific fraud. That's what it is. And the people buy it. Why do they buy it? Well, because they're ignorant. They don't know. What the hell do you know about carbon dioxide in the atmosphere? Well, everything that you know about carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, you got in 30-second blurbs from Brian Williams and Katie Couric. Isn't it? I mean, how many textbooks have you written? Or how many have you read? You know, just stop and think about it for a second. We are motivated by, and we're moved by, and we vote by 30-second sound bites. What do you know about this candidate that you're voting for? Well, I saw him on television, and he looks real good. And he's anti-gay, or he's pro-gay, or he's anti-abortion, or he's pro-abortion, you know, one or the other. And so he appeals to you because of, well, he's a Republican or he's a Democrat, or he's against wasteful spending, or he's in favor of the stimulus. I mean, that's where reality's at, isn't it? Now, this is a good place to remind you of Professor Ernst Haeckel, who faked evidence to support his religion of evolution. I'm going to underline that. First of all, I'm going to put down here Professor Ernst Haeckel. I want to underline that. And his religion. I like that term, his religion. Hey, listen, everybody's got a religion, and if your religion is evolution, that's fine. I mean, hell, I'm not opposed to evolutionary religion. But, you know, when evolutionary religion gets into my back pocket in the form of taxes to support public schools to promote this kind of religion, you know, I'm not a Catholic, and I'm not opposed to Catholicism, but I really don't want to support Catholic schools with my tax dollars. And I really don't want to support religion. You know, I'm not anti-religion, but I'm not pro-religion. I'm kind of neutral. And I'm not opposed to all you religious people out there building churches and jumping up and down, hooping and hollering, and doing whatever you do. That's fine by me. I just don't want to pay for that. And I'm kind of getting a belly full of this religion called evolution. And then we've got these two religions. We've got the creation religion, and then we've got the evolution religion fighting over who's going to get to teach what in the public schools. And boy, is there a bunch of books out here now on that. There's a simple, logical solution. See, I'm not opposed to creation being taught in the public school. If you creation guys want to teach creation in your public schools, that's great. I don't care. And if you want to teach evolution in your public schools, I couldn't care less, because I don't think that public school is the place where I want to educate my children. So I educated my children at home, homeschool. It only costs 1/10 as much, and you get about, let's see, it's 86th percentile versus the 50th percentile. You get a 60% better return on your money in quality of output by educating them at home. So there's the solution to this controversy. And then it fixes everybody's little red wagon. So you creationists don't have anything to complain about, and the evolutionists can teach whatever the hell they want. Everybody's happy. Just like I am. I'm happy as a clam at high tide with the IRS, the Federal Reserve, creation versus evolution. The controversy over abortion versus right to life, I don't have any bitch with anybody. I'm just happy as a clam at high tide. And that's because I'm not supporting any of the above, and so they're not taking my money, and so I'm not really too concerned about it. And I want to show you how to do that. Stick with me. I'm going to show you how to do that. But meanwhile, we're at the halfway point here, and I got to remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. They might, you know, they may dislike us with great intensity. So keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And then finally, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing a book. The book is called Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith. It's paperback. It's written by a fellow named Don Boys, spelled B-O-Y-S, Ph.D., piled higher and deeper. Don Boys, Ph.D. I thought Mr. Boys did a did an admirable job. I'm not going to grade this book, you know, like a 1 in 20 or 1 in 100. There are hundreds of books out on the marketplace about evolution and creation and court cases and the arguments that go on. This is a good one, though. Some of them are kind of mediocre, and some of them are better than others. And I'm going to grade this one as better than others. It's not exactly a 1 in 20. If you've read any books on evolution or creation, you've probably read books like this. Or as good as, and maybe even better than. I've read better books than this on evolution. Better. But this guy is adequate. In fact, he's a little bit better than adequate. And he's got some good lines in here. Really good lines. And the thing that caught my eyeballs on this one was a chapter 18 on scientific frauds. And I got to thinking, well, how many of these scientific frauds are there? And the answer is eight. Eight scientific frauds. Life from outer space, Archaeopteryx, Java man, Neanderthal, Piltdown, Nebraska, Peking, and East Africa man are all fakes. They're all frauds. And I liked his book. I liked his chapter 18 because it answers that question. Not very many books ever get down to, well, how many times have we been lied to? Well, the answer is eight. Eight. Now, that's not on all of the subjects of anthropology and paleontology and so on. It's just as it relates to East Africa man, Peking man, Nebraska man, Piltdown man, Neanderthal man, Java man, Archaeopteryx, and life from outer space are all as phony as $3 Federal Reserve notes. And here's the part I really liked about it, was that it isn't uncovered by the Reverend Pat Robertson, or, you know, by Billy Graham or somebody. I mean, it isn't the other side. The guys that have uncovered these frauds are the evolutionists. They are the paleoanthropologists. You know, the guys that perpetrate the fraud, and then their buddies find out, hey, wait a minute, Bob lied to us about this. He's trying to make a big name for himself. And then here's the kicker. They never correct the textbooks. I never saw a textbook after Piltdown Man in 1948 was exposed as a fraud. I have never seen a textbook anywhere that said, hey, it's a fraud. Now, in the scientific literature, it's exposed, but none of us ever read scientific literature. When was the last time you read the Anthropaleontologist's Review? Huh? Come on. Hell, you couldn't even spell that. And neither could I. And so we don't read these trade publications, which are just for the elite of the elites, you know that they're lying through their teeth. When we go to school and college, they teach us, you know, with great solemnity, you know, about Piltdown Man. And then when it's proven to be a fraud, they just silently remove it for the next generation textbooks. And then they tell us about Java Man. And then when we find out that that one's a lie, then they just silently remove him and replace him with Neanderthal Man. See? All right, so with that out of the way, then, let's take a look at the story from Life from Space. And if you'd like a copy of the book, let me give you that information here. It was first copyrighted in 1904, so it's 16 years, and I think that the copyright is 18, so I need to give this guy credit, otherwise he might get excited and want to prosecute me for plagiarization here. Mr. Boys says that no part of this book may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, and so I'm not here to transmit or to give you any information. I'm here to promote his book. It's a hell of a good story. It's good reading, and it's written so well. He's a creationist, and he doesn't hide it. He's a creationist. So that'll eliminate all you evolutionists out there. Don't you buy this book. But all you creationists out there, you can buy this book because he's a creationist. See? The thing I liked about it was that he exposed the lies from the evolutionists. And I always like people that expose lies, because it gives me something to talk about. It gives me a program, you know. I can come on the air and I can say, hey, listen, did you know this? Hey, listen up. All right, so this book was copyrighted back in 1994. It's called Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith. And then there's a story here about the author. He's got quite a little story here. He was a representative in Indiana. He's written 10 books. He's a Ph.D., taught college. He's well known. I don't know if he's in Who's Who or not, but, you know, this guy's, he's not just Joe Sixpack. I mean, this guy's got some stuff going for him. Now, I can't find out who published this book here. Let me see if I can look here. Library of Congress catalog card number. I got that on here. Published by Freedom Publications, P.O. Box 981, Largo, Florida, 34649. So it tells me that this book is probably published by one of these little rinky-dink underground publishing companies. And it's too bad, too, because it's such a good book. It's about 300 pages, 295, 319, about 350 pages here, beginning to end. Softback, paperback, they call it. Freedom Publications, P.O. Box 981, Largo, Florida, 34649, published in 1994. You'll probably play hell trying to find one of these, so why don't you go to bravenewbookstore.com and see what they can do for you. bravenewbookstore.com, and their phone number, 512-480-2503. Again, that's area code 512-480-2503. So while this book, Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, written by Don Boys, is not unique, evolution is not unique. Hell, it's been around for 150 years, and there's lots of people writing about it and against it and for it and so on. So there's plenty of information out there, but of all the books on evolution that I've read, I'd rate this in the top 10. I think number one would be The Genesis Flood. You want to understand evolution and Noah's Flood and geology and anthropology and so on? I'd put The Genesis Flood right at the very top, number one. And then this book, Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, I would place somewhere in the top 10. It may be number 10. It could be number 5. I'm not quite sure where I'd put it, but it's a goodie, really a goodie. It's just that evolution isn't unheard of. All right, so we're over here on about page 255, looking at Archaeopteryx over here, life from space. A fragment of meteorite was reportedly found in southwestern France in 1864, and the claim was made that it contained evidence of life from space, but it was not looked at closely for more than 100 years. Now, can you believe that scientists would not pursue proof of life from outer space if they had it in their hands? You know, it just kind of sounds strange if you think about it now. We've got this meteorite, and it's got life from outer space, and we put it on the shelf and forget about it for 100 years. It's like bringing moon rocks back, you know, and we'll put them on the shelf and we'll look at them 100 years from now. The fact is, they needed some proof to support Darwin's recently published book. Now remember, this is 1864. Darwin published his book in 1859. 5 years later, they come up with proof. Now, the great scientist Louis Pasteur had just delivered a strong defense of divine creation as the only possible source of life, and the meteorite fragment proved Pasteur wrong. But, as it turns out, the meteorite was a fraud. A French microbiologist found that it had been altered by glue, seeds, coal, gravel, and tissue to impress the gullible. Now, while it was a fraud, I should point out that it was a French scientist who revealed that fraud. Now, have you ever heard of the meteorite from outer space discovered in 1864 being proven a fraud? I never had. I had heard about the meteorite from outer space. And I want to point out that God, the Creator, came from outer space. Well, he had to come from someplace. Now, he says that he's without beginning and without end, and he says that he has existed forever, and that he showed up on the scene one day, and he created the heavens and the earth and the fullness thereof. And I'm just reporting what he reported. I wasn't there. I can't contradict the guy because I wasn't there. What the hell do I know? So, when I read in the scripture, you know, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, I take it at face value because I wasn't there and I can't contradict him. Now, there are other people out there who do. They do contradict him. They say, oh, no, he's a liar. But that's not true. That didn't happen that way. Let me explain the Big Bang to you. And then they go on and I ask them, you know, sometimes I say, well, were you there when the Big Bang occurred? And they'll say, no. So you're not an eyewitness then? No, no, I'm not an eyewitness. But we have evidence. And then when we say, well, what evidence do you have? Well, you know, and then they go on and they talk and babble and they use Greek words and big words that you and I can't pronounce and can't spell. And then that impresses us, and then we believe what they tell us because, after all, we don't like God anyway. I mean, there isn't any of us out here that like God. We hate him. We always have. We do now and always will. In fact, he even went so far as to say, you know, that people, this is in, I think it's in Romans 8, verse 7, something like that. He says, the carnal mind is enmity against God. It isn't subject to the law of God, and neither indeed can be. And so, when we embrace evolution, we're just doing what comes naturally. It's kind of like a Doberman pincher, you know. He just comes naturally, you know, to grab people and bite them. Archaeopteryx. God, that's a word, isn't it? Let me spell this for you in case you know you're a plumber like I am. It's spelled Archaeopteryx. We couldn't call him dinosaur bird. We have to call him Archaeopteryx. And then we say, spell it. Archaeopteryx. Evolutionists have told us that Archaeopteryx is a missing link between reptiles and birds, showing a gradual change from one to the other. Of course, they would need to produce thousands of fossils to show the change from one species to another. Well, they don't have thousands, but they got one. It's called Archaeopteryx. I can remember this guy. I can't spell him, but by God, I can remember him. He was in school when I was there in the 1950s. Archaeopteryx was in school with little Georgie Gordon at Eureka High. I remember this guy. He was in the textbooks. I didn't know he was a fraud at that time. I believed he was a pretty good bird or half dinosaur. I thought he was all right. Now, evolutionists put a great amount of faith in Archaeopteryx, only to be disappointed again. Archaeopteryx, according to six British scientists, is a fake and fraud. That's right, Arch has turned out to be a dirty bird. Or to put it another way, Arch fouled his nest and theirs. The report said, quote, the controversy started when six scientists, including Sir Frederick Hoyle, a British astronomer, asserted in a scholarly paper in March that the feather impressions of the museum's specimen had been fabricated in the 19th century. It was a hoax, unquote. Note that this fraud took place only 2 years after Darwin published his book, so it tended to provide much-needed proof of Darwin's book in 1861. Hey, listen, that thing was still circulating in 1955 when I was in high school. 1955. Now, the report continued, quote, one of the authors, Dr. Chandra, watch this one, Wickrow Massengi. Boys and girls, you cannot make up names like these. Let me spell it. Wickrow Massenghe. She is an astrophysicist and has been quoted in a British newspaper as saying the purported hoax was carried out by someone who made a paste of crushed limestone from the same period, smeared it round a genuine reptile fossil, and then imprinted the feathers. And it's interesting that Hoyle and Wickramasinghe wrote a book that documented this fraud in detail. And both are highly respected scientists. Now, we creationists are appreciative of their contribution to our cause. But then it was a contribution to science in general. Most evolutionists will not look at the truth if that truth interferes with some of their pet theories. All right, so now we've got the space meteorite, and we've got the Archaeopteryx. Now, if you want to prove these out, what you do is you get online and you plug in Archaeopteryx and life from space. And then you'll see where these scientists that uncovered these frauds have written books. See, in your college textbook, they're never going to tell you, hey, go look at this book written by Wickrowhamsinghe. You know, they're not going to do that. Doesn't bolster their case. They shut up about it. Well, after all, that's what we do in law. You know, if we're in court and there's some piece of evidence that will bolster your case, you can rest assured that I'm not going to present it. Now, is that honest? No. No, it's not honest. But then who in hell ever said that a lawyer was honest? I mean, come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee here, kids. If you've got a cause over here that you're trying to promote, you know, it's like trying to sell Chevrolet automobiles. What are you going to do? Point out to people that the rear end in our Chevrolet automobile is pretty weak and that the Ford really has a better rear end and, you know, or better engine or, you know, better. No, we don't tell you about our weak links or spots or points in our automobiles and our products. We point out the weak points in the Lexus. We say, hey, that Lexus over there, it's pretty weak up here, see? And ours is really strong there. Java Man. Let's take a look at Java Man here. One good example of actual data being rejected for ideology is the Java Man, discovered by Eugene Du Bois in 1890. They dug out a small part of an upper skull, a tooth, a socket, three teeth, and the left thigh bone. And those few bones were not found together. They were 70 feet apart. Of course, there was no way to know that each one of these fossil parts made up the same person. They were also found over a year's period of time. But that fact wasn't revealed until much later either. Now, you wouldn't know it from the textbooks, but the experts disagreed over Java Man. The German zoologists believe he was an ape. The English zoologists believed that he was a human, and the French thought that he was an ape man. Now, from the meager remains, the scientists made some amazing deductions. One evolutionist said that Java Man had a tail. Another said that his jaw projected like a snout. Now, that's called creative reconstruction. Or more precisely, it is quackery. But quackery abounds in evolutionary circles. Now comes Haeckel, who had a life-size model of Java Man constructed that was exhibited in museums all across Europe. A detailed drawing was made showing the hair on his head and any intelligent person seeing Jab a Man in the papers had no thought that they were looking at a portrait of a thigh bone, three teeth, and a fragment of the cranium. Unquote. But the big secret that Du Bois kept from everyone is that he had found two human heads at that same level in the same strata of which he found Java Man. Of course, that would have eliminated Java as ape man since man, or men, were already living. After all, you can't live before your parents do, except in the fairy tale called evolution. Eugene Du Bois, the discoverer of Java Man, finally admitted just before his death that Java Man was not an ape man at all. The skull was really the remains of a large gibbon, tailless ape. After he blew the whistle on this broad, some evolutionists continued to promote Java Man in the school textbooks as a person who had actually lived. Other evolutionists dismissed Du Bois as unreliable because of his admission of fraud. Real people of character, right? Now, why don't the scientists ask some really pertinent questions in regard to uncovered bones? And of course, some scientists did reject Java as an ape man, but these objections were lost in the crowd that applauded the discovery because it supported Darwin when he needed the support. Now, how could a handful of bones be used to reconstruct a prehistoric race, even with the hair color? How could they be so sure that the bones belong to the same individual? How have those unpetrified bones survived for the alleged million years? But evolutionary scientists don't ask those kinds of hard questions that would reveal the fact that evolution is resting upon nothing except hot air, imagination, wishful thinking, circular reasoning, and outright fraud. It's just plain lies. Many of the evolutionists must write part-time for the Saturday morning cartoon shows. After all, making deductions about Java Man's snout and tail from the meager evidence discovered is like finding the rear wheel of a 1959 Edsel in a ditch, along with the left front headlight, and arriving at the conclusion that the original Edsel had been driven 76,000 miles at an average speed of 41 miles an hour by a little old lady from Pasadena with fallen arches. And they call this science, boys and girls. That's called science. Well, with that in mind, let me remind you, and we've got about a minute left, Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, written by Don Bois, Freedom Publications, Post Office Box 981 in Largo, Florida, 34649. Remember, this book is 16 years old. If you'll go into a used bookstore, give them that information. You want Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, Don Bois, spelled B-O-Y-S, Ph.D. They'll plug that into their computer, and they'll find this book somewhere in the world. It may be in Cape Town, South Africa, or Long Beach, California, or Toronto, Canada, but they'll find a copy for you. Again, that's Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, written by Don Bois, Ph.D. Hey, we'll be back with more next time on scientific frauds. But meanwhile, back on the farm, let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.